So, welcome everyone, and thank you for joining our monthly Conscious Dating Teleseminar. This seminar series is designed to help you find the love of your life and the life that you love. So please mark your calendar and be sure to join us on the first Thursday of each month, and we hope we'll knock your socks off with outstanding, one-of-a-kind programs you won't want to miss. I'm Frankie Dorn, President of Relationship Coaching Network, and my job is to creatively apply all the resources in our organization to help you have successful relationships. For example, on the third Thursday of each month, David Steele and I will conduct a free monthly Conscious Dating Teleclinic, and that provides some real-time coaching and relationship advice. For information about the teleclinic, you can visit www.consciousdatingteleclinic.com. That's www.consciousdatingteleclinic.com. Tonight our teleseminar is called Conscious Dating at a Distance. What to do when you are attracted to someone who's 1,200 miles away, or even further, or maybe a little bit closer. And we're really fortunate to have four very qualified RCI coaches who will share their professional and personal insights about long-distance dating. And I'll let each of them introduce themselves a little bit later and share a little of their personal experiences. In this program tonight, you'll discover the 8 biggest challenges to long-distance dating, tips and insights to overcoming those challenges, how conscious dating can help you conquer the scarcity mentality, and hopefully, much more. We know that one of your highest goals is to find your life partner, and our mission and commitment in this program is to help you achieve this goal. And we'll pull out all the stops tonight to do so. We'll be recording this teleseminar, so if you would like to receive the audio file and a complete written transcript, here's another URL. Visit www.consciousdatingaudio.com. That's www.consciousdatingaudio.com. Tonight's seminar will be approximately an hour in length and includes a question and answer period at the end of the program. So please make note of any questions you may have as they come up during the call. And if you have a specific question that you would like to direct to one of our panelists, please jot down their name beside the question, because otherwise it might get a little bit confusing. And we are prepared to extend the call duration a little bit if we have a lot of questions. So Don't be worried that you're not going to get your question in. As I said, in order to eliminate the background noise, which could affect the quality of the sound, I have muted all the callers so that I can't hear you now. When we finish delivering our content, we will open the lines again for questions and comments. So let's begin. Well, it's really important to deliver a balanced program to you tonight, and that means being clear that we are not advocating long-distance relationships over traditional face-to-face relationships. Indeed, being a conscious dater means you are aware of the opportunities around you in your local geographical area. And it also means you don't buy into the scarcity mentality, which could lead you to seek a partner from further afield, like 1,200 miles away. And long-distance relationships are really not for everyone, and many don't work. But some people, including myself, have had very successful experiences and have found our life partner that way. Tonight, our panel will address the major challenges facing long-distance lovers and provide tips and suggestions on how to overcome those obstacles. And now I'm going to ask my guests to take a few minutes each to make their own introduction and share their personal experience with long-distance relationships. And Randy, would you kindly begin?
Why, sure. Just make sure I'm not on mute. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine, so I think we're good to go.
Okay, great. My name's Randy Hurlbert. I'm not sure why Frankie has me going first here. I think maybe it's because she heard my Playboy radio interview last week and wants to get me off the air quickly. Or maybe she knows I'm calling on international long distance and trying to save me money. I'm not sure which it is, but anyway, I guess first of all, I want to say that my business in San Diego is Conscious Dating San Diego, and that's a part of David Steele's Conscious Dating Network, and I'm really proud of that. Secondly, I want to mention my book, which is called Love is Not a Game, But You Should Know the Odds. And this is a book about why good love is so hard to find and what to do about it. And among other things in the book, including chemistry and emotional maturity, it talks about long-distance relationships and which ones have the best chance to succeed. So my book is found at www.loveisnotagame.com. And in my own life, I've had probably more than two significant relationships, but two that were significant and long distance. One is my marriage, and in that case, we got married like right out of college, and we had gone to two different colleges hundreds of miles apart and didn't really spend the time that we should have spent to get to know each other. Plus, you know, we weren't very conscious at the time. So, you know, that ultimately ended in divorce, although, you know, we're both good people and still friends and that sort of thing. But, you know, that's one story that didn't work very well. On the other hand, my current relationship with my fiance is also a long-distance relationship. You know, Frankie mentioned 1,200 miles, but in this case, 12,000 miles. She lives in Thailand, and I am right now calling from Thailand because I'm here visiting her. So I've kind of been on both sides of this and have, I think, perspectives that'll be interesting to share when it gets to be the right time.
Perfect. Thank you, Randy. Lois.
Hi, Frankie. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, great. Hi, everybody. My name is Lois Forth, and really delighted to be part of this panel today. I'm a coach and a facilitator and a writer, and my company is One Dream at a Time Coaching and Consulting Services, and I have a private practice in New York City. My website is www.onedreamatatime.com. And the focus of my work is with relationships, relationship with self, one's dreams, and, of course, romantic, or as I like to put it, luscious life partnerships. Because I truly believe that life partnerships are meant to be luscious. I mean, why else go through the work that it takes to not only bring a life partner into our life, or as I call it, the getting ready to be ready process, but once we have one, to really rise as opposed to fall in love. I'm a life coach for Fitness Magazine's Fitness Makeover, and I've been featured on Good Day New York and have facilitated workshops around the country. My articles have been published in the New York Times, Massage Magazine, amongst others, and I'm accredited through the Empowerment Institute, Life Blueprint Institute, and RCI. Now, in terms of today's topic, long-distance relationships, my experience is both personal and professional. For a year and a half, I was involved with what I call a local long-distance relationship. And what I mean by that is my partner at the time traveled over 75% of the time. Though it was a hybrid, it definitely spoke to the challenges of the long-distance relationship. Thankfully, I am a retired serial dater, having met my luscious life partner, Charlie, 5 years ago. In my practice, I've coached countless professionals who, in their work, traveled a lot and met many prospective suitors along the way. I've seen long-distance relationships work and not work. And my personal goal today for today's call is that people will come away with information and resources so that they can powerfully choose what feels right for them, given what they want in their life. You know, one of my favorite taglines comes from Sims, which is, for those of you who may not know, it's a local clothing store chain in the Northeast. And at the end of every commercial, Cy Sims always says, an educated consumer is our best customer. Well, to me, what works for finding the ideal outfit works for creating the ideal relationship. It's important to be educated.
Lois, thank you. I love that luscious partnership.
Oh, thank you. Glad you did.
Sounds delicious.
Absolutely. It's the only way to go.
Before I ask you to introduce yourself, Melvin, I'm just going to ask the panelists to put themselves on mute when you're not speaking, because we're picking up a little bit of background noise. And that's just star six. When you want to talk again, star six will bring you back. So, Melvin.
Yes, Frankie.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good.
Great. Okay, Melvin Allen. I'm from Los Angeles, California. Really been here about 2 years. I used to live in New Jersey, which will tie into the long-distance relationship that I had with my wife for years. A little bit about me. I've been on national television at the Starting Over show twice as a coach, relationship coach expert. I've been on television last year 4 times. I've been on radio. As a matter of fact, I was on a radio show this morning, and I've been on radio more than 3 or 4 times. And I also have a television show, cable show here in Los Angeles called Relationships 911, where I bring people on talking about various aspects of relationships. And my wife also works with me. I've been married 4 times, not once, not twice, not 3 times, but 4 times. And after the 3rd time in 1990, I decided that I was going to go on a quest to find out why relationships didn't work and why they don't work. So for the last 17 years, I've been looking at relationships. I've talked to over 6,000 women for various reasons in the last 25 years. I have a master's degree in spiritual psychology. I also have been studying ontological studies for over 25 years. I graduated from Results Life Coaching, and I did that about 15 years ago. I finished Relationship Coaching Institute work sometime in the middle of last year. And I have a series of seminars that I produced on relationships, but currently we have one called Relationship Readiness Intensive, which is a full weekend where we actually help people from a spiritual place become conscious of what is necessary to have a successful relationship. So I, like David Steele, believe and am committed to decreasing the divorce rate and improving the qualities of relationships worldwide. And my website is www.melvin.com. And Sherry, and that's A-N-D, and Sherry is S-H-E-R-R-I-E.com. Now, my long-distance relationship, after 3 marriages, I said I will never get married again, and I found that I was the only common denominator in every one of those relationships. But I found my current wife, who was living in Los Angeles, and I was living in New Jersey. So for 5 years, we went back and forth from Los Angeles to New Jersey in this long-distance relationship, long-distance calls, trips in the whole nine yards, and we started out dating, got engaged, got married, and it was still long distance, and I've been in L.A. the last 2 years of the last 8 years that we've known each other. So I know something about long-distance relationships.
Thank you, Melvin. And I love that relationship 911. Great concept as well. Janice.
Hi, Frankie. Hello, everybody. I am very excited about participating in this panel tonight, mainly because my 19-year marriage began as a long-distance relationship. Successfully navigating the 3,000 miles between us during our courtship has made me believe that long-distance relationships can and do work. In addition to utilizing my 21 years of psychology skills and experiences, my own dating experience has informed much of my philosophy and practices now as a relationship coach. My website is drlovecoach.com, and I have been quoted in Us Magazine and Cosmo Magazine on issues pertaining to creating healthy relationships. I believe it a privilege to have coached singles to help them find life partners, despite the challenge of dating someone who may have initially been considered geographically undesirable. A little backstory, I guess is required. I was living in Los Angeles, had just completed my doctoral studies and taken the licensing exam, and agreed to attend a girlfriend's wedding in New York. I was set up on 2 blind dates during my trip by friends, and one of the men I met happened to be Richard, my future husband. We went out twice, agreed that there was mutual interest, and decided to continue, quote-unquote, dating long distance. Now remember, this was in the late 80s, long before the internet and email, cell phones, and text messaging. But enough of my relationship requirements and needs were met, so I decided that it was worth it to see what would become of our courtship. Most importantly, we both had the same ultimate goal, that of marriage and children. Having both been through painful breakups with significant others earlier in our lives, and neither of us had children, we each knew we were looking for a committed relationship. Working professionally with singles toward the end of the 20th century and now in the 21st century, I've witnessed and now believe that while dating someone long distance might be a bit easier with the internet and cell phones, it still remains challenging. Singles have and will continue to meet when they attend far away from home family functions, business meetings, or vacations, and when they travel by plane, train, bus, ferry, and or carpool. So you have my personal experience, philosophy, and belief in long-distance dating. What shouldn't surprise you is that my coaching approach is consistent with the principles of conscious dating. Whether a coaching client comes to me already trying to navigate a long-distance relationship, or is considering entering into one, or met someone who was geographically undesirable after we had started our work together, the first step always consists of knowing who you are and what you want. For me, I knew that I wanted to be happily married. After I met Richard, I realized that it didn't matter where I lived as long as I could work in my chosen profession, and in New York City, that wasn't so difficult. I wanted to have children and be with someone who shared that goal. And being a mental health professional with many years of my own psychotherapy, I wanted someone who was emotionally healthy and stable. Having that vision of my ideal relationship helped me to see how we could move closer to one another despite the distance. The principle of conscious dating, be ready and available for a commitment, was already in place for me. The next principle of conscious dating, learn how to get what you want, requires that I be a good detective. Consequently, we spend a lot of time on the phone asking each other questions, as well as just sharing some of our past experiences and, of course, about our daily activities. This way, I was able to determine that he was a good listener, shared my values and goals, cared about me, and was indeed emotionally stable and healthy. These are just some of the strategies that I encourage my coaching clients to use as well. While I didn't have my own personal coach at the time, I knew that in order to get what I wanted, I had to keep focused on obtaining the information I needed to keep moving forward. I'm happy to say that just about all of my coaching clients report that they valued the constant redirecting I provided, as well as the emotional support I gave them to stay the course. And it looks, you know, like a few of us have traded coasts, right? So I'm going to stop now and turn the teleseminar back to Frankie and the other panelists, and I'll share some tips about how to handle a couple of long-distance dating challenges later on.
Great. Thanks, Janice. And you know what? I'm listening to all of you tell us about your background. And by the way, thank you very much for sharing your background and experiences. And it occurs to me, how qualified is this panel to talk about this subject? It's amazing.
Yay, yes. Yay.
So listen, let's get right into the top 8 challenges facing long-distance lovers. So Randy, you're up first again. I hope you're back or you haven't left. What are your top 2 challenges?
All right, I am back, unmuted. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Number one, I call the conventional view of love and marriage trap. And what that means is that most people picture relationships as living together and sexually exclusive. And although love and marriage don't have to be that way, it is the most common vision. And so if your desire is to live together and be exclusive, and if your belief is that that's how it should be, and if your expectation is that this is how it will be, then the reality of long-distance relationships is likely to lead to disappointment, especially if you're in a hurry. The reality is that even if both people want to live together and be exclusive, it's more difficult because it's inconvenient and it may take longer to resolve these issues than you think. And, you know, you've all had the experience that when expectations are different from reality, you wind up in disappointment and frustration. And, you know, it can be even worse if one person wants to live together and the other doesn't, or one it's important and the other it's not that important, or the timing is off. So although couples living in the same locale have the same problem, it's exacerbated by the distance and just the sheer difficulty of, you know, having to make a move to another city. And the same is true with the exclusivity side, that, you know, there's deprivation and there's temptation and these are forces and stuff happens and that can cause guilt and emotional distance and insecurity. So, you know, if one wants the exclusivity and the other doesn't, that can lead to conflict. you know, especially when there's so much opportunity.
So, Randy, what are the solutions or tips to overcoming this particular challenge?
Well, as Janice said, number one is to be clear in your own mind about what you want. And at the same time, what I coach my clients in is be prepared to change what you thought you wanted into what you really want. Because a long-distance relationship can be a testing ground to determine what you really want and whether you're able to be up to the challenges and, you know, get through those tests. So talk to your partner about what you each want, but don't get entrenched too soon while you're still testing and maybe changing. And in addition, I think Lois mentioned this, is consider alternative, design your own relationship style, something that works for you and may not be the conventional view. Negotiate how much time you really need and consider whether that requires living together or moving to the same city. Certainly take reasonable safety precautions with regard to sex. Consider don't ask, don't tell philosophy with regard to exclusivity. And probably most important is don't be in any rush to make important decisions. And that means enjoy the moment with what's going on and let the decisions come in their own time.
Really terrific insights, Randy. Thank you. And you know, when you realize that conscious dating is about making choices that meet your specific situation and requirements, this thinking, this concept is really outside the box, and it's wonderful that, you know, think about what you want, and it may not be the traditional relationship that we're used to. So what's the next challenge?
Well, this one I call the limiting your opportunities trap. And people who have long-distance relationships often cut themselves off from other more local opportunities to meet people, and they do this based on fantasy instead of reality. So, you know, whether people are dating long distance or locally, they need a period of non-exclusive dating to find someone who truly meets their needs. And the fantasy in long-distance relationships may cause one or the other person to become exclusive before they should. In other words, while they should be still dating a variety of people, because to find a life partner, one who really meets your requirements and needs, you need to meet a lot of people. You need to screen and test, find out if they're a good match, and that takes time. Usually doesn't happen with the first person or even the second, third, or fourth. And sometimes because of the cost of long-distance relationships and the high fantasy, it could be enticing to abandon meeting other people.
Very true. So what's the solution then?
Well, number one is to bring the fantasy down to reality. And for that, it's important to meet your long-distance partner soon, meet them often, and meet them for extended periods of time. And secondly, in order to find the best match for you, it's important to continue dating others, whether it's local or long-distance, until one of those relationships, and I emphasize the plural, becomes the secure and real relationship, and that usually takes some time. Might be 6 months, might be 2 years, it depends, might be more.
Exactly, and that's the rule of non-exclusivity. That's part of the conscious dating principle. Well, thank you, Randy. That was terrific. Janice, would you like to take the next two challenges?
Sure would. Thank you, Frankie. I am going to talk about the challenge of missing each other's physical presence. When you're attracted to or dating someone long distance, it's pretty much inevitable that you're going to miss each other's physical presence in your daily lives. This can lead to feeling disconnected, and the challenge therefore becomes how to keep an intimate connection going even from a distance. The risk, though, is creating too much of a virtual intimacy that doesn't match the real or actual level of intimacy. This can happen in a couple of different ways. If you've only met virtually, like on an online dating website or before a blind date, that's usually when you talk on the phone ahead of time, the desire to feel connected can lead singles to spend too much time sharing intimate details about themselves over the phone or by email. This creates what I call a pseudo-intimacy, which is not a real or actual intimacy because it doesn't take into account the intangible aspect of chemistry that only happens when you're in someone's physical presence. So if you've met someone online or over the phone and you think there's potential for a relationship, then it's understandable that you'll feel disconnected from this person until you've met in person. So instead of having hour-long chats or exchanging long emails to close the gap, you need to make every effort to meet in person in order to gain a real or an actual connection. However, the more common problem that singles dating long distance experience is when they've already met in person, have experienced chemistry, and agreed to pursue the relationship across the distance. Feeling disconnected is then normal and understandable, so the challenge is how to maintain the contact and the intimacy until you can see each other again.
That's a really tough one, Janice. So what are your recommendations?
Well, I have a few suggestions based not only from my own personal experience, but with coaching others in long-distance relationships. So I guess you could say these are tried-and-true techniques. I don't think there's anything wrong sending quick emails or text messages to one another during the day, but only to the level each of you are comfortable with. This is just as true for couples and even friends who live and work in the same city. But people have different tolerances for being interrupted while going about their daily lives, so this is something you have to figure out together. But whether or not you're in periodic virtual contact, I suggest that you schedule phone dates. These are times when you've planned to give each other your full attention so you can discuss the events and experiences in your life. If you both have webcams, hey, that's even better. By sharing aspects of your lives on a regular basis by phone, you're able to better focus on the message and the person while not getting distracted by the environment, like if you were at a restaurant or a bar. That is, unless there's very loud construction noises around you or screaming and yelling children. My suggestion is really try hard to make this alone time. Intimacy and connection is increased as you each relate stories about your day and the feelings that they bring up. These disclosures may feel risky, but being on the phone can actually help to decrease the sense of risk-taking. But that also means you need to do some degree of self-monitoring while talking on the phone. You know, don't let go of all of your inhibitions. And I strongly suggest to avoid phone sex because it only makes you feel more frustrated. An important tip on phone dates is that you attempt to use the time productively. While you are, understandably, missing one another and feeling disconnected, I suggest that rather than just mope and complain about how you can't be together, agree on a book or a magazine article that you both want to read and then discuss it. Continue to ask questions about the kind of relationship and life you each want and get to know one another in substantial, productive ways.
A mystery, like you said. That's great advice, Jen, and a lot of common sense, too. So what is challenge number four?
Well, challenge number four has to do with recognizing and handling red flags. While it can be difficult to recognize red flags, even when dating someone nearby, it's true that recognizing red flags can be especially challenging while dating long distance, but it's not impossible. A red flag is something that your dating partner might say or do that warns you of a problem area in the relationship or specifically in the other person. Rather than go into a lot of detail about defining specific red flags, I want to present a real-life example from my own coaching practice. Jerry, call him Jerry, was visiting New York City last January from Florida and attended a singles event where he met Michelle. He was a 40-year-old divorced father sharing custody of his children with his ex-wife. He was very motivated to remarry, and because he wanted to date in an efficient and conscious manner, he hired me as his coach. After their first meetings, Jerry returned to Florida. He and Michelle began speaking on the phone and emailing one another pretty frequently. He would travel to New York City every other weekend, staying at either friends' homes in the city or with family members in New Jersey. Then, Jerry and Michelle would get together two or three times over the course of the weekend for their dates. They quickly determined that they had the same relationship goal, which was marriage and children, in the traditional sense. Okay, Randy? Jerry felt certain pretty quickly that Michelle met his relationship requirements and needs and felt they were compatible on many levels. But Michelle was 32 years old and never married, And so Jerry knew he would have to be patient to allow their relationship to blossom. Jerry and I monitored the development of the relationship in his weekly telephone coaching session. We decided to emphasize pretty early on identifying any red flags he encountered. We had agreed to look out for red flags since he knew he initially had deeper feelings for Michelle than she did for him. So he wanted to be sure that he could be conscious in his decision making, in other words, use his head, rather than just be led by his heart. The first red flag he encountered was when he wanted to be exclusive with Michelle. Michelle hesitated. Jerry had decided he himself would not date anyone else, and he had simply assumed that she also was not dating anyone else. But because of the distance and knowing how he felt about her, I encouraged him to share this and to ask Michelle sooner rather than later. He did, but it took about 6 weeks for Michelle to agree not to go out with other men, which she did agree to wholeheartedly. So Jerry no longer saw this red flag for the relationship. Another red flag that Jerry saw was Michelle's apparent lack of warmth when they were around children. Not only did Jerry have children already, but he wanted more, and while Michelle said she wanted children too, he was concerned about how she interacted with the various children they met, like their nieces and nephews or children of friends, when they went out together. Jerry and I discussed if how Michelle behaved around children was going to meet his relationship needs and requirements or become a deal breaker. Again, I encouraged him to talk about this with Michelle and to be conscious about this aspect of their relationship's future, so he brought it up for discussion first over the phone. Interestingly, Michelle responded by saying that she saw this more as a reflection of their different styles of relating to others, especially children. Jerry acknowledged that he is a more outgoing person in general. That's true. But more importantly, she revealed that because of the long distance, the infrequency of their dates, and the time they spent together, she felt like she was under a microscope when they visited others, and this made her feel pressured. But as they continued to date and socialize more over time, he saw how she made greater efforts to engage with others and not just children, and so this eventually no longer remained a red flag. A few other red flags were identified during the course of Jerry and Michelle's long-distance relationship, which were discussed during our coaching work together. Like the two I just described, they were viewed from the context of knowing that they were living 1,500 miles apart and unable to address and resolve many of them face-to-face. It's possible that they appeared as red flags specifically because of the distance, but they were able to work them out over the phone and when they could be together.
That's a good point, Janice, because of the distance. And thank you for those great examples of how to screen and test potential partners, because it really is a process that takes time, and you can't rush it, can you?
No, you can't rush it, but, you know, as I said earlier, recognizing red flags while dating is a challenge, even when you live in the same neighborhood.
For sure. So what's the solution for this challenge?
Well, often because of the constraints of distance, coupled with the desire to make the relationship work, many red flags might go unnoticed. So the solution to this challenge is to be particularly observant of the words and behaviors that concern you, and to raise these concerns sooner than later. Now, Jerry benefited from having a coach to work with who could legitimize his observations and help him develop tactful ways to raise his concerns and share his feelings and needs. And as coaches, I'm sure I speak for all of us on this panel tonight to let you know that we're available to help you navigate your relationships, whether they're over long distances or not, so you can attain gratifying and fulfilling life partnerships. Okay, Frankie?
Thank you very much. Thank you for sharing your insights. And there is no shame in asking for help, no matter what it is. So I'm going to turn it over to Melvin now for challenges 5 and 6. Melvin?
Okay, challenge 5, making a decision to move and live together before they have spent enough time together. Long distance can extend an infatuation period. A long distance relationship is as difficult as it is, but deciding to move in is, like I call it, is like trying to buying a pair of shoes without trying them on. They may fit, but they also could be very uncomfortable. And moving in together can be a very fatal mistake. It's an intense form of a mini marriage.
Yeah, mini marriage is the deadly mini marriage, or the dreaded mini marriage. So what's the solution?
Okay, before moving, the couple should consider themselves in a pre-commitment or premarital stage. Now, that means that you haven't made the commitment to get married, and you're doing this, as someone said earlier, detective work on a personal level for each other. They should examine what it takes to create and maintain a successful relationship, and they should also hire a relationship coach or someone to determine their individual visions, their values, and the requirements for the relationship. And this is critical. Even if you were living together in the same city, you would want to do the same thing. But distance, you definitely want to do that. And when you are in love or infatuated, it's hard to be objective and balance the heart with the head. Requirements that they're not met will cause someone to leave the relationship. And relationships, as difficult as they are, so if the requirement is not met, you know, and it's something that you don't want to get confused with your personal ideal deal breakers. People think that you're my deal breaker is that if you lie to me, but that doesn't really focus on the relationship, which are the behaviors of the relationship, not the behaviors of the person, but the qualities of the relationship. They also need to uncover the unique emotional and functional needs and wants, which after the relationship are the next most important things. Unmet and undistinguished needs will trigger issues, and everybody has issues, which may or may not be solvable, but they will not destroy the relationship. So after you're able to distinguish your requirements and then distinguish your needs and also your wants, you're able to really kind of navigate through this very difficult channel of water. And emotional needs are necessary to make you feel loved, and functional needs are necessary for the relationship to function, like who pays the bills or who would, you know, take the garbage out and who does the housework. And wants are like extra credit. It's like a 60-inch television in white with surround sound for the Super Bowl party. You know, that's really nice, but you don't have to have it. Testing the relationship, asking hard questions, meeting relatives and friends to provide to provide you some insight, because relatives and friends will, you know, unconsciously say things that will give you a tremendous tip into who you're dealing with. And those are important intimate details that a person may or may not bring up. And both parties should know everyone's financial backgrounds and status before moving in, so that you're not moving across the country and finding out that, you know, the person doesn't have a really good job, but on the telephone they sounded wonderful. Plan a lot of trips. Also plan the future. You know, actually talk about why am I moving, and if I do move, what does this mean? Does it mean we're getting married, or does it mean that we're going to, like, be able to date other people, and get that very clear. And even have it to a point that that person can share that with their friends and family and community, so you know that they're just not talking to you, but they're really putting it out in the universe. The distance can add to the fantasy and the fairy tale belief that extraordinary weekends, hot sex, and many vacations can sustain or even increase when a couple decides to live together. And, you know, anybody can dance for 30 days and have a wonderful weekend, but if you can actually sustain that and be with a person day in and day out, and go through the trials and tribulations of a normal day and a week and a month and a year or a lifetime, that's a different type of relationship than a long-distance relationship. Expectations are filled with unrealistic beliefs, filled with unrealistic goals and loss of freedom, unanticipated changes in routine, family, financial challenges, friends, and individuality. Because when you move, you give all of that comfort and that security up to go live somewhere else. It's very dangerous. Before anyone decides to relocate, I recommend an extensive testing plan, which could be supported by a relationship coach or someone objective to be able to really help them ask the difficult questions that they may be too uncomfortable asking of the potential partner in order to have a successful relationship.
Sound tips, Melvin. And, you know, when you were talking, it occurred to me that one of the differences between conscious and, let's call it, unconscious dating is when you're unconscious, if your friends or family have a comment about your boyfriend or girlfriend, you don't want to hear it. It's like an ostrich putting their head in the sand.
Exactly.
But when you're conscious, you ask your friends and family for their opinion. You want to know what they think about your potential partner. So thank you very much. Terrific insights. And so what's the next challenge?
The challenge number 6, expecting exclusivity when neither party can control it or observe it or promise it, when they don't intend it. And that's very difficult for people also. Sometimes a long-distance relationship is a cover for someone's inability to make a commitment. Mm-hmm. People can make commitments, 2 feet away, or they can make it 2,000 miles away. But if a person finds it convenient to have a long-distance relationship, it may be a sign that they can't make a commitment because they look at it as like, well, they're not living close to me, they don't know what I'm doing, and it makes it very convenient for them to just live in fantasy land. The freedom to go and to do whatever you want when your partner is hundreds or thousands of miles away is available with a long-distance relationship. I believe complete trust is critical. And if there's any doubt whatsoever, leave the relationship. Because if that little voice inside of you says something's off, and you know something's off, then I think you should trust that little voice and realize that you don't want to move across the country or 50 miles if necessary to find out that that little voice was telling you something that you didn't pay attention to. And here's where a coach can help again. Some important exercises to do with a coach is looking at someone's family history, looking at past relationships, actually to see the relationship history as well. You know, have the past relationships been successful, unsuccessful? Have they have a problem with commitment or trust or intimacy? Because typically history repeats itself. And if you really can, like, listen to people who knows the person that you're involved with, they'll tell you things, if you listen well enough, about their family history, about their relationship history, and then you can get a sense of who you're dealing with. And the last thing I would say is that, you know, moving across the town or the country or the city or wherever you move is a very, very serious decision. And I don't think, as someone said before, you can do enough investigative work in order to be comfortable that you know who you're dealing with.
Very, very sound advice. And I just want to add something to that. I always tell my clients, your inner voice never lies. Now, that's distinguishing inner voice from inner critic.
Mm.
Inner critic, I don't like to listen to, but the inner voice will never lie to you. So thank you very much, Melvin, for that great advice. And Lois, we've got two more challenges.
Okay. Well, challenge number 7 is not understanding the interplay of infatuation, true chemistry, and emotional maturing. And the distance makes it much more difficult to get all of this into a realistic footing. And this is a really rich, multifaceted issue that speaks not only to long-distance relationships, but really burgeoning relationships as well. You know, I have a running joke with my clients when they go out and they start to date a lot and they complain and they go, oh, there's no chemistry, no chemistry. And then I say, well, what is chemistry? And usually they can't even define it. They'll say something vague like, oh, I don't know, excitement. To which I say, you mean like sweaty palms and a racing heart? And they're like, yeah, sort of like that. To which I respond, you know, sometimes sweaty palms and a racing heart isn't always chemistry. Sometimes it's food poisoning. And we laugh about it, but they get the point. You know, we give so much power to, quote unquote, feeling a certain way that when we meet somebody and then we name that chemistry, and then out of that we just snap to a yes-no decision instantaneously, if either that's present or missing. And I call that just add water chemistry. And it's tenuous at best and rarely sustainable. And unfortunately, very prevalent in long-distance relationships. Now, I just want to clarify that I'm not talking here about the desire to have rapport. You know, when you enjoy each other's humor, their mind, and by the way, they're not too bad to look at either. Now, that's healthy desire. Where long-distance gets tricky is that you don't have the nuance of nonverbal communication to accurately read the person, the relationship, especially in the early stages. They usually are very whirlwind. You have condensed pockets of in-person intimacy that doesn't give you the information that the day-in, day-out, getting to know the mundane as well as the stellar moments in another person's life can.
Yes, Lois, I agree. This is very treacherous ground. So what's the solution to this challenge?
Well, to kind of resonate with what we've all said is about really realizing right off the bat that right there some of the relationship puzzle pieces are inherently missing in this equation. So how do you deal with that? You go slow. I suggest to my clients who are entertaining long-distance relationships, don't make any major decisions until you really log in the hours, the weeks, the months, and pay attention to those red flags that dance by those phone emails or intensify truncated visits. And one thing I just have to say aside is when these relationships or any relationships have kind of fallen apart, when we go back, my clients invariably have always been able to pinpoint the red flags, where they said, thank you, voice of instinct, but I'm going to do what I'm going to do. So I always encourage them to really honor, you know, the red flags. Another point is know your soft spots and know them well. Now, I have to admit, if you're like me, someone who has literally, all too many times, I must admit, fallen in love with a man who played the English language like a Stravinsky violin, be careful of prolonged conversations. They could be very misleading and totally intoxicating. The other thing is, I think is really important, is to be real with what you want in your life. I mean, how does this relationship support or not support that? And in other words, in terms of really having conversations with people, I suggest that they have very pointed, vision-oriented questions to ask in kind of a very easy, playful manner, such as questions like, if you had a magic genie who granted you your perfect life, what would it look like in 5 years? Or, if you won Lotto, what would change in your life? What wouldn't change? Questions like this are very helpful in finding out where your partner's priorities and values are. Another big thing is to really go on with your non-relationship life and see this journey as icing, but not the batter of the cake. See, I've seen so many clients who were in a stuck place in their professional life. They use a whirlwind long-distance relationship as a distraction to avoid looking at the bigger picture of their life or avoid taking actions they really know that they need to take. And, of course, like everybody else said, whenever possible, spend as much prolonged in-person time with them as possible. You don't know the person until you know the person. End of story.
How true.
Mm.
And like I always say, love isn't a race. You know, there's no such thing as a relationship emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So it pays to take it slow and steady.
Thanks
very much, Lois.
Sure.
So we have one more challenge.
Okay.
What's that?
Well, challenge number 8. And this is a big one. Thinking that they're in love based only on email and telephone contact. And then they're either very disappointed or persist in the fantasy when they finally do meet. And I call this virtual relationship syndrome. And I find it very prevalent, not only in long-distance relationships, but internet relationships as well. You know, we're in such a high-tech period that people are so busy, and people have entire relationships without ever spending any one-on-one time with each other. And it fosters a level of fantasy that, for the most part, eliminates, as I said, the richness of the nonverbal communication. Many times I'll ask clients, well, how long are you dating this person? Only to find out that they've had 4-hour conversations, enough emails to fill a notebook, and they've only met twice. In some cases, not at all. And with only phone and email to base the relationship on, you could really have a heyday with fantasy and assumptions.
Oh, big time. Big time.
Absolutely.
So what's the solution, Lois?
Well, I think the first step is meet in person as soon as you can, and you'll get more information in one in-person meeting than in several days, weeks, or even months of phone or email. Now, when you do speak, I would suggest to be very intentional about what you speak about. First, get clear with yourself what you're looking for, first in your life and then in your relationship. And be honest about your lifestyle. If you just want something casual, then perhaps it's a good fit for now. If, however, you're looking for what I call a luscious life partnership, use the phone and email sessions to really get to know the other person, not just flirt and banter back and forth. Nothing builds more fantasy than juicy content with no context. Listen intently on their lifestyles, their choices, their values. How do they talk about their family, friends, coworkers? Do they like their work? That's a very important thing. Are they good listeners? Now, for some people, it may not sound very glamorous or romantic, but it will save you from falling into the fantasy pit. And what I think is one of the biggest indicators is how do they react when you suggest an in-person meeting? That will tell you a lot. If they make a lot of excuses of why that can't happen, pay attention, and in my book, run the other way. I call that behavior. You know, behavior is bold and words are weak sometimes. You know, they may only be interested in virtual relationships. And relationship success resides in the space between the words, not just the words themselves.
So true. Thank you, Lois.
You're quite welcome.
What a fabulous job, coaches. Thank you very much for your insights. You know, this is an area that's fraught with pitfalls. And I think tonight you've given us a lot to think about and some really fabulous tips. Hopefully, will help people avoid those pitfalls. So before we open it up to questions, I'd like to remind everyone that you can get a written transcript and audio recording of this seminar. And here's another URL. We got a few more. You can go to www.consciousdatingaudio.com. That's consciousdatingaudio.com. It's only $9.95, and you'll get immediate access to the replay line until we have the edited version of the MP3 recording. And also, if you're serious about finding your soulmate and want to kickstart the process, we have a 4-week conscious dating relationship success training for singles program. It's a teleprogram beginning Tuesday, February 20th. And we have a free information call on February the 7th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. So to register for this free call, go to www.consciousdating.com/ready.htm. That's H, Tom, Mary, consciousdating.com/ready.htm. And I'm going to take everyone off mute. So, I'd ask that if you have a question, unmute yourself. Just key in *6 of our panel, you know, if you have a question for the panel. And if you are just waiting, please keep yourself on mute so we don't have any unnecessary background noise.
Yeah.
Okay. So who's got a question? Mm-hmm. Hello?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just finished...
Hey, I'm hearing
we
someone.
We just finished a few hours last week, and now this is my week to get reorganized. And then I'm going to drive down Sunday. And then Monday.
Hello? Oh, this is terrible.
Hang on a second.
You're talking. We can hear you talking to someone in the background about driving somewhere. Would you mind putting yourself on mute? *6. Thanks. Okay. Any questions?
Yes. This is Suzanne in California. I like your saying getting to meet each other as soon as possible. Now, if people are doing virtual dating through the internet, what would be a reasonable amount of time before they'd get to meet each other? Now, what's not too much too soon, and what's, hey, is the other person playing a game because we're not meeting yet?
I'd like to take that.
This is Lois. I'll take that because I really resonate with that one. That's a great question. I actually have, you know, my whole mindset is I like to create principles for my clients, support them in honoring their principles versus rules. But I suggest to them, you know, what are 3 to 4 key pieces of information that you need to know? Not that you're going to drive off into the sunset with this person, but that warrants your attention enough. We're all such busy people to actually meet this person. And usually we come up with about 3 or 4 pieces of information that to know. And then from there, they initiate meeting this person.
Lois, can you give us an example of what one of those criteria may be?
Sure. Well, it also depends on what the person's requirements are, but one thing that really speaks to a lot of people is, does this person like their job? Do they have, do they enjoy what they do? Is there a passion when they talk about the things that are included in their life? That's a big one. Also, if somebody's value is health, does this person talk about, oh, they're partying a lot? That might be a real red flag. Do I really want to meet this person? So things like that.
This is Janice. I'd like to comment on the question, too.
Sure.
I think that it's really easy to get seduced into doing a lot of emailing and phone calling before you've met somebody in person. Regardless if you have criteria or needs or requirements or standards or principles, after a while you could be spending hours still on the phone and still doing the emails without meeting. And I think that there has to be a time when you say, I'm saturated. It's enough already. We need to graduate to meeting in person. So I think that it's important to be in touch with your own inner voice, your own inner gyroscope. I don't think that I could go on continuing to have this virtual or what I call this pseudo-intimate relationship, and I have to meet you in person. And you'd start negotiating on that, and I think a red flag there is, if somebody says, no, I really can't make it, or I have to get my passport together, and you start hearing the hymns and the haws, or you hear, yes, I'm getting on the plane tomorrow. I'm going to come out to meet you.
This is Randy. I want to agree with both Lois and Janice and add one additional thing. In addition to, you know, finding out who they are and meeting soon, there's a reality issue here. You know, if your virtual relationship is with someone who's 20 miles away versus 2,000 miles away, you know, if it's 2,000 miles, it may take some time to figure out the logistics of getting together and meeting. So, you know, you may need to give it that amount of time, but the cautionary note is that while you're giving it that amount of time, don't get too far bought into it. This is, I think, what Janice is saying. You know, give it the time, work out the logistics, but, you know, don't continue to get yourself bought into it until you've met in person.
That's a good point, because restraint, emotional restraint, I think, is what will save a lot of people from getting into a difficult situation where emotionally they're involved, but as Janice said, it's pseudo involvement.
Yes, pseudo intimacy is can be shattered within 30 seconds or 2 minutes of meeting somebody in person after you've invested so many hours on the phone or by email. You know, you have to give that so much credibility and balance that out, that investment. As Lois says, you know, she has principles. I have a principle, which is I'm trying to save my clients in the time investment and the money investment and the energy investment and going after something that may not give a good return on the investments.
I have a question for Janice.
Go ahead.
Janice, just wanted to go back to what you were mentioning about running the other way if the person reacts when you want to meet them. I'm in a situation where I was dating somebody who ended up leaving out of town a few months after we started dating to start school for a couple of years. And opposed to what everyone is saying, where it's really fantasy over the phone and then when you meet, things are different, it's actually really great when we're together. But it's over the phone that is really complicated and difficult because you really can't be with that person. So I'm not sure how to look at this based on what everybody's saying.
Well, I think we were trying to differentiate between dating somebody virtually and never having met before in person. But you already started having met and dated and creating at least the beginnings of a relationship in person. Is that correct?
Janice, let me interrupt for a second here because we're getting a lot of
echo. Yeah, we're getting a big echo.
So if you're not speaking, would you please make sure that you're on mute, star six? Very much.
So what you're experiencing is a problem with being able to maintain your connection across the distance. Is that right?
He's experiencing it more than I am.
Yeah, yeah.
He's having a really hard time with having a long-distance relationship, and
yeah,
he's not even interested in having me come up for the weekend because as I leave, he crashes.
Right, right.
And so he'd rather just not see each other until there's a long period of time where he can see me because he's in school and he's just focused on school.
And so what's your reaction to that?
I'm okay with him being in school, but I would like to see him a little bit more often, but I'm trying to understand from his perspective.
Yeah, it sounds to me that you do understand from his perspective, but it might take some more communicating and negotiating and compromising. You
right.
know, it might mean that you can still have a connection and you do trust him and he definitely wants to focus on school. And if you support him in his school endeavors, you don't want to distract him from that, of course.
Right.
Right. But it might then take more communication so that he understands your feelings, he understands what your needs are, and that you can come up with a plan together that you've negotiated and compromised so that you can still get some of your needs met and he gets his needs met and he can get straight A's in school. And you're not going to feel so frustrated and distant.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You know, I'd like to add something to that, too, because, you know, if you're very clear about what your relationship is going, where your relationship is going, then you have a roadmap with some intentionality and a goal.
Mm.
So if you know that you are looking at getting married, you think differently than someone who's just dating. And if it's going to be recreational where everybody gets to go date each other because, you know, you're so far away, then that gives you a different framework. So anywhere from dating to being married will give you a different course in every one of those scenarios. So if it's pre-commitment, where you haven't made a commitment to really be a couple yet exclusively, then there's one set of rules. And if you like premarital, where you're getting ready to get married, it's a different set of rules. So I think from where you are, you need to really look at where you're going and see if both of you are on the same page, because I think that will set a lot of things in motion as far as intentionality, purpose, time commitment, and trust.
You know, it's amazing to me, Lois and Melvin and Frankie especially, you know, that we're all thinking the same way, we just say it a little bit differently,
mm-hmm.
but we all are really thinking so similarly about relationships and about connecting and how to connect. It's really, it's so inspiring for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask a question that might get some people's, some people reacting, but
ooh, good.
Really,
a challenge. We love a challenge.
Yeah. Can you really ask someone, I mean, I know you can, but for me to sit and say, what is going to happen in a year and a half? I want to know. To me, it seems a little bit absurd. Yes, we've talked about marriage. Yes, we've talked about our concerns about marriage. There's a bit of an age difference. And, you know, how is that going to work out? How is somebody who's just finishing school, who doesn't even really know where he's going to be placed when it comes to work, really answer me to say, oh, yes, for sure, I'm going to marry you in a year and a half when I'm done school?
You know, before anybody answers that, I just do want to say that that can happen even if you're not in a long-distance relationship, right?
Correct,
right.
Correct.
Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I have a bit of a hard time just listening to what Randy had said. You know, it's not pretty. It's not premarital. It is exclusive, and at the same time, it's. I feel like it's in between. And is there such a thing as saying, "Yeah, I want to know in 2 years what's going to happen," and give me? It's almost like I'm asking for a guarantee when I'm very clear there are none.
Just to clarify, that was Melvin.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Randy was Melvin.
Okay.
Randy is here and would like to respond. And, you know, I think that what you're saying is right on target, that it's very difficult to tell or ask somebody for a guarantee in the future. You know, I don't know how long you've known each other, but, you know, let's say you've known each other for 6 months, a year, a year and a half, you know, and some of it's been long distance, you can't really tell for sure. And you need to base more on what you feel is happening in this relationship. And, you know, it's, you know, what did Yoda in Star Wars say? It's, you know, trust your feelings. And I'm not talking here about the chemistry infatuation thing that Lois was mentioning. I'm talking about your gut feeling in terms of his level of attraction and commitment to you. And if day to day and month to month it keeps growing, then, you know, that's something that is worthwhile if it is, in fact, important to you. And it's more, you know, my mentor, Dr. Bissell, a psychologist who is the co-author on my book, says direction, not perfection.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's moving in the right direction, then you kind of stay with it, and you can't really expect a guarantee.
Okay, that's great. Thank you for putting that in. It makes a big difference.
This is Lois. I'd like to respond to that as well.
Lois, I'm.
Oh, do you have to go? Do you have to end?
No, I think that we need to make sure that we get to everyone's questions. So
oh, okay. No
I'm
problem.
Sorry to cut you short.
Not at all.
But
not at
I want to make sure we get people.
Sure.
Any other questions?
I have a question.
Yeah.
I have a question. If you can hear me.
Yeah, we've got a lady before you, and then we'll take you after her.
We're getting the echo.
Okay. Mike, well, I don't know if it's a question. It's a statement about something that happened. I met a guy a year ago, and I just went out with him once, and he called me again this year right after Christmas. And we spent the weekend together, the first weekend. I mean, he went home at night, but he was here all day because we had a snowstorm, and we were kind of stuck inside. So he came over, and we watched movies. And we started developing this chemistry, or we started noticing that it was there. So he came back again the next weekend, and we hung out and watched movies and went out and did some things and did a lot of talking. Then it happened again the third weekend, but he said, I could only spend Friday because this is going really fast. So he said he was only going to spend Friday, but it ended up being Saturday and spending the night, Saturday night. He woke up Sunday morning, and he said, you know what? He said, I'm, like, overwhelmed. And I said, what? And he said, well, my whole life I've spent living my life with my intellect. This is the first time in my life I've actually felt this much, and I've never felt this much chemistry in my life, and I'm going to have to take a couple of weeks just processing this and thinking about what's going on. Well, that's now 2.5 weeks ago. He called me once. He emailed me once and said, we should have lunch later this week, which would be this week, but it hasn't happened yet. And I'm wondering, what the heck is going on? This must be a male thing that I don't get.
wants to jump in and take that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll take that. This is Melvin. I think that men do that. I think that it's not uncharacteristic for us to back off, to reassess where we are, especially if we're in a territory or an area that we're not familiar with. We're trying to figure it out, and we're trying to see, like, what am I doing? Should I go back? Should I not go back? And we do that. Now, on the other side, I would probably suggest to you, just watch, because if you really watch and listen, you probably will be able to learn a lot about who you're dealing with. And don't be uncomfortable, because if he's not pursuing you, I definitely would not pursue him. And it may mean that he really is not that interested in you, and he doesn't know how to call. Or it may mean he's processing the information and the experience, and he's got to, like, figure out what to do next. And just sit back and wait, and don't make anything up. Just base your, you know, base your thinking on facts versus what you feel. And you will know one way or the other.
Okay. Now, he told me that he's never felt this kind of chemistry ever in his life.
Frankie, I really need to say something about this. This is
Randy.
And add to what both Melvin and Lois have said on it. First of all, this chemistry thing is very unreliable for the first, I'll say, few months. You know, it starts to become more reliable as you get towards the end of a few months. But, you know, in the beginning phases, it's very unreliable, and it's really more like infatuation. So you need to give it that three-month period of time to find out whether it's real or not. And then another aspect of finding out if it's real, and this is another thing I learned from Dr. Bissell, and it's included in the book we wrote, The Love Is Not a Game book, is a questionnaire that tells you what your real, true chemistry is. And it's not the sex, and it's not the infatuation. It's after you get to know someone, you ask yourself these questions like, you know, my friend is a beautiful person, rate that 1 through 5, or, you know, this person's approval is very important to me, and you rate that 1 through 5, and you answer these questions, and you get a real, honest-to-gosh reading for the true chemistry.
Okay,
so give it time,
it.
And then take
I do
it
have that book, yes.
Yeah.
Okay,
and,
good.
And it's very true, Randy, because the initial chemistry is really, your system is flooded with hormones. So, you know, it's terrific. You do need to wait. And Melvin's advice is very sound. Don't chase. He has to come. So let's take, there was a gentleman who asked a question, and he's waiting.
Yes, you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. This question's for anybody on the panel that wants to feel that, it's pretty obvious. It's always very important that one be true to themselves and the values that they have. And this can be true whether it's a close relationship or a long-distance relationship, but I think it's a little more difficult when you're dealing with a long-distance relationship. And my question is so, you know, how do you really get a feel for whether the other person is really being true to themselves, as opposed to, well, maybe there are some red flags or even pink flags, if you will, in their mind, but they just kind of gloss over them because they're wrapped up in the long-distance relationship, if you understand what I'm saying.
I would suggest you hire a coach or find somebody to support you, because I think that someone outside of your relationship could possibly guide you into asking those difficult questions and to have you think about things that you typically may not think about. No one taught us how to do relationships, so mostly we're running on impulse, gut feeling, chemistry, infatuation, love, and all of those things can get us in trouble. So there's very systematic ways of really testing any relationship and seeing where it is, where it's going, and how you feel. Is it infatuation? And having the kind of conversation and dialogue with the other person to find out where they are. So they may be in a totally different place, and you might not feel comfortable asking those questions because you don't know how. So get some support whenever you're stuck.
Maybe someone could, you know, mute themselves so I could still have to hear myself when I respond next. There's a very big echo. Thank you, everybody. I think that it's really important that you do have somebody who is objective enough to help you pick up on the cues and clues that are out there in the relationship that you may not be able to see. You know, a lot of times we're looking to see if the person is honest and kind and generous and have integrity, and if they're ready to be in a relationship. But we can be seduced by the fact that you know they're in the same kind of religion position we are, or they have, they're very financially stable or successful, or they're gorgeous, and you know, lots of different things that could seduce you into thinking that all of those other, you know, necessary qualities are there, but they're not really there. And having an objective third party to help you pick up on those cues and clues, especially the honesty one, which is essential, could really be helpful for you.
The person who asked the question is on a speakerphone. That's what's creating the echo.
Sir, can you move to your handset?
Great.
Oh, that's much better.
Much better.
There is no roadmap for relationships, but a guide, a coach, can help you find signposts, and that's what's important, because you know the answers. It's just sometimes they're too buried, and that's where coaching is really beneficial. Next question? Anybody?
Maybe they have to unmute themselves first.
Star 6 to unmute.
Hello?
Yes.
I have a question. How do you find the right coach?
Good question.
It sounds like great people on the panel, but is coaching at a distance as effective as trying to find somebody locally, or?
Well, most coaching is done over the phone. So geographics really, I don't think, enter into it. Certainly when you're coaching singles, that's my experience. But you can take a look at the International Coach Federation. They have a Find a Coach service. And just check in your, I think even in your local phone directory, you may be able to find coaches.
Yeah, well, Frankie, David's going to kill you for not mentioning that the Relationship Coaching Institute does have a Find a Coach system. And the four of us who are on the panel tonight, we all have our bios and links to our websites on the teleseminar page at consciousdating.com. I think that's, consciousdating.com/seminarseries.htm. And I know, you know, you've heard it from all of us, and maybe you'd like to contact any of us to either buy books or to sign up for comp sessions or for to subscribe to newsletters.
Great.
You know, I'd like to just say a 30-second. The right coach for you is a person that you feel connected to, just
right,
like the person you're in a relationship with.
Absolutely.
Because I would interview 2, 3, 4 coaches until you found someone who could really hear you, and to, at a point where you know there's a difference, there's a connection, and you can hear them as well as, you know, vice versa. They can hear you and you can hear them. So I would look at least two, maybe four coaches and actually interview them to find out which one works for you, regardless if it's an RCI or a coaching federation or somebody in the yellow pages. Spend the time and invest the effort to find out who they are and what they do, what they specialize in, and do you feel comfortable with them?
Great. No, that's good to hear. Because partly I feel like I need coaching around some of the relationship stuff, and partly around some of my running my business and work issues. So those are the two areas, but also somebody who I have really good rapport with seems really important to me. So thanks for that.
But that's what we want for all of you. We want you to have somebody that you can trust and you have a rapport with, that you can talk about the things that matter to you. And we can then help steer you and guide you and support you as you get the results and attain the kind of goals and have the kind of life that you want.
Great.
Any other questions?
I have a comment, actually. I have a lot of questions, and there's probably not much time left for that. So I just want to comment and say how immensely helpful the call has been tonight, and I really appreciate everybody's input and insights, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
We're delighted.
Any other questions? We're willing to stay here to answer your questions if you have them.
We were just so clear, Frankie.
I have another question.
Okay.
How many people, I mean, this is just a generalization, I'm sure, but how many people would it take to meet on the Internet before you would actually find your life partner? I mean, I know some people find it the first one. But for the rest of us, Is it normal to be doing this for a couple of years?
I think it's, this is Lois, I'll speak to that. I think it's a really individualized process, but I think the big thing, I've had some clients of mine meet on the internet, I think it's really being very specific. One of the distinctions in RCI, which I love, is basically people write ads in two different ways. I call it the best foot forward ad, and we usually get a whole ton of responses, and then the one that's really specific to what you're looking for, and you'll get less responses, I can assure you, but they'll be higher quality or more resonant with your values and who you are. And I think that's a really important thing. So, you know, there's inherent, you know, it's sort of an, it's not really a numbers game in my book, and it takes what it takes, but the more you get clear, both in the listening of who responds and asking the right questions, and also really, really presenting yourself in a very authentic way, I think it really, it kind of shortens the learning curve. And as we've all said in one way or another, meeting the person as soon as possible. People who go on the internet year after year, I find that they just do a lot of back and forth emails. And when I actually ask them the percentage of people they meet, it's maybe 10 to 15%. So wow. I think that's really what really belabors the process.
Because I would meet like 3 or 4 people a week typically.
Well, I would like to add to that,
sure.
Frankie, is that if the internet should be one part of your strategy to find a partner. It should not be the only place that you're present. And David talks about that in the Conscious Dating book.
Yeah.
It's about the 4 levels of where you're going to meet a partner, and you have varying degrees of potential success based on where you are. And when you go to church or synagogue, or if you volunteer at, let's say, Habitat for Humanity, you are more, you have more values in common with those people than someone that you would just meet in a bar or even on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to cast your net wide. And I think that's where you can get, you know, increased success in finding a partner.
This is Randy.
Any other questions? Sorry, I hear someone.
Well, I wanted to add this
okay.
is Randy to what she was saying. I was going to ask whether you're meeting 3 or 4 people a week on the internet or actually going out and meeting them in person.
In person.
Okay, because that's what I was going to say, is it's important to not just meet them over the internet. It's important
to meet
them in person.
I meet 10 or 15 on the internet and 3 or 4 in person.
Oh, you're a busy lady.
Yeah,
I'm a
busy lady. But then the key thing is to be clear on your requirements and to test them to find out what kind of people they are, and also to, you know, have the best dating skills that you can have so that you, you know, put your own best foot forward.
Yeah.
Any other questions? We've got a few people vying for the
Go ahead. Okay. Well, my situation is the following. It's funny because I kind of reconnected with this friend I've known for 10 years. And, like when we met, we were both married and like, but our lives are like dramatically changed in 10 years, and we kept in touch all this time, but like not very, consistent. And then he wrote me again in January, and, he's a single dad and I'm a single mom, but, we live like 2,500 miles apart, and we've been, you know, talking about our kids and our lives and what we're doing and our jobs and, you know, and it's really nice, and I just want to, you know, pursue a relationship with him, but I don't know how to ask him, like, you know, about doing this, like, in the distance, like, I would like to date you, you know, it's, like, so complicated because we're friends. And
so just to clarify, so your question is, how do you share with him that you would like to take this to a different level? Is that what you're asking?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'd like to answer that one.
So, this is Melvin. I would suggest that you be very frank, honest, and upfront and just say so. Because if he's the right person and if the shoe fits, he'll put it on, lace it up, and wear it. If he's not the right person and he would like to have a relationship with you as a friend.
1 minute remaining.
Oh.
as a friend, then I would think that he should have the ability to state that, and you should be able to hear that, so that you don't spend too much emotional energy and invest too much time.
Yeah, but do you think he won't, like, you know, withdraw if I just...
Who knows,
you know,
what
come
he'll
up
do.
So strong?
You know, part of it's like jumping in the water to find out what the temperature is. You got to do something other than just make up assumptions without having him be able to respond to that or share your feelings so he knows exactly where you are. But if you just do this dance of you don't want to ask him and he may not respond and he may withdraw, then it's like having somebody in the door prevents someone else from coming in the door. So you get to be the chooser. So you decide if you want to continue it or not.
Yeah, and do you think that's better over the email or over the phone? Like in person or just...
Well, I think that's a personal preference. I think you do it the way you feel most comfortable.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. And next question.
Hi, it's Nancy here. I was just wondering, when you do, you're at a point where you can meet somebody. Let's say you're coming from two very long distance points, meeting in the middle. Where do you meet? What's a good place to meet that's safe? And what do you, how, do you have any tips on that?
I'd like to take that one.
This is Lois. I mean, obviously you want to, not even depending upon you know, how long you know the person, you actually don't know the person until you know the person. So I would say, you know, obviously public places isn't optimal. Make sure that you're safe. I think the other thing that people fall into the trap is they'll do this kind of mini marriage for the weekend and they'll spend the time together as opposed to just separately, like renting, you know, staying in different places and then just meeting like maybe two or three times during the weekend, if you're both meeting in a middle ground. But I think, you know, safety is a very important thing to be very careful about because people can paint a very different story than who the reality of who they are. So
sure
you should be mindful of that.
Safety is foremost.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Any other questions? Have we come to the end? Have we exhausted the question?
No, you haven't. I've got one.
Okay.
Wait a second. I'm involved in something. I think a pre-committed relationship with somebody I met through the internet. I've met people locally too, but this is we've been corresponding for about 5 months and talking on the phone almost every day. We've met face to face once, and in another 6 weeks or so, we'll have a chance to be in the same city, his city, for 4 days. And I'm trying to set priorities. You know, what do I really look for when I've actually got that limited amount of face-to-face time? Or is that just a function of what my requirements are?
I think it's absolutely a function of your requirements. And, you know, keeping safety in mind and just understanding where you both are in terms of what type of relationship are you looking for. You know, are you recreationally dating? Are you looking for something longer term? There's a lot of things that...
And we've both talked about we're looking for something longer term.
Mm-hmm.
And we're both exclusive at this point. At least that's what he's telling me, and I don't have any reason to doubt it. I have lots of evidence that that's true.
And this is Randy.
Yeah.
The thought that comes to my mind, and there's probably lots of other thoughts as well, but it's to, you know, enjoy this time that you have together. I mean, you've only met him once in person. This is the second time, so this is really too soon to be making firm judgments and decisions about the future, though it doesn't hurt to talk about it. But the main thing is to be there in the moment and enjoy the time and, you know, ask the questions that you want to ask, but mainly enjoy it, get a feeling for it, and then think about it afterwards.
Mm.
And I'm a little concerned, actually more than a little concerned about this talk about exclusivity so early on in the relationship. There's a lot you don't know about him. As Lois keeps saying, you don't know until you know. Or something like that, Lois.
That's what I said.
Well, I didn't make a decision to be exclusive. I just, everybody else I was seeing kind of fell apart. I haven't met anybody recently, and this continues to grow. So it kind of evolved. It wasn't like, I'm done looking.
You know, this is Janice. I think that, again, I do agree with Randy that you do need to spend time together and enjoy one another. And I don't know if it therefore works if you're exclusive by default.
Mm.
You know, this feels good. It's kind of working out. We're on the phone. We're doing email. We're going to see each other in 6 weeks. But, you know, you still have your whole life where you're living now. And, you know, by default, you've started to, you know, be really invested in this person. And I'd be concerned about the balance between your virtual intimacy and your actual intimacy. So one way to kind of diffuse that is by continuing to have as much of a social life as you can manage in your real life. You know, otherwise it's exclusive by default.
Good advice.
Yeah, very good.
Any other questions? Okay. Well, I think then, if we have no more questions, let's wrap up the call. I'd like to thank everyone for participating, and we look forward to seeing you at our next free teleseminar, which is going to be held on March the 1st, the first Thursday of every month. And our topic for March is Conscious Dating for Boomers, Finding Love Over 50. So that should be an interesting one. And then on Valentine's Day, at noon Pacific and 3 p.m. Eastern, we're having a very special conference call. It's the one-year anniversary of the publication of the Conscious Dating book. And we'll also be announcing the winners of the Conscious Dating Success Story of the Year contest. So hope you join us for that. And then we also, in 2 weeks' time, on February 15th at 6:30 Pacific and 9:30 Eastern, we have our Conscious Dating Teleclinic. And that's for live coaching and advice. And you can register by going to www.consciousdatingteleclinic.com. And it's free. So I thank everyone and have a terrific evening.